This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and he joins us on Tuesday afternoons to talk growth and development. Take a moment, if you can, very quickly to remind people what Charlottesville Tomorrow is and perhaps is not.
Yes. So, Coy, I'm very happy to be here, of course. And Charlottesville Tomorrow is a community organization. We're nonpartisan. We're all about covering local land use and transportation decisions in local government. So city council, city planning commission, and then the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors and the county planning commission. We also follow a lot of other entities that have meetings about those subjects. So things like the Metropolitan Planning Organization, which studies transportation, we go to their meetings. And it's all about getting the best information possible to the public so that they can make up their own mind about these matters. Charlottesville Tomorrow really doesn't take a position for or against a particular development, road project, whatever, candidate. We do send out a voter's guide. So covering elections for the supervisors or city council is also a big part of our work. And again, same with candidates. Get the information to the people, let them make up their own mind about the candidates and vote accordingly. But get people plugged in and doing things.
And there's a lot. There's cvilletomorrow.org, which is your website, has more about these issues, these growth and development issues and transportation and water use and more about all of those issues on your website than on any of the local news media websites.
A good thing we're realizing we have is a good archive of some of these stories over time. And so our blog, where you can go and see where we're breaking news stories and documenting what happens in these public meetings, you can click on a category and pull up all the articles about North Point, for example. North Point's a major development we're going to talk about. You could also pull up all the articles about Biscuit Run or about the city council elections. And so that archive, I think, is going to be very helpful to new people that move into the community, certainly to journalists who are covering these stories. And you know, that wasn't something we really expected when we launched Charlottesville Tomorrow. But in a lot of ways, we've sort of become a C-SPAN that, you know, covers local meetings gavel to gavel, puts that audio up on the internet when it's not otherwise available, and lets people tune in to local government.
The website is cvilletomorrow.org. And you mentioned North Point. Remind us what North Point is and why we're talking about it today.
North Point is a major development that was approved back in 2006. It's up Route 29 North, past Airport Road. And people who know where 84 Lumber is, it's the basically everything north of that to the North Fork of the Ravanna River. Past that, you run into the National Ground Intelligence Center, further up 29 North. So that's sort of the next thing after Badger Fire Protection, the company that is also along 29 in that area. But North Point is a major development because it's on about 260 acres, but 900 homes would be part of a future North Point development.
Gosh.
Also, big box grocery store, department store, hotel, offices. So there's a good mix of commercial and residential activity within the North Point development.
How far does it go back? Like if I'm driving on 29 North and I pass Airport Road, North Point would be off to the right where all those woods are now. Some of it's clear, but mostly still woods. Mm-hmm. How far back does that go?
Well, probably the best way for me to describe that would be if you turned, let's say you didn't go north, but you turned right on Profit Road.
Yeah, like you're going to 84 Lumber.
Right. And then Pritchett Lane is one of the first turns on the left. And that's sort of the other boundary of the North Point development.
So not too far back.
Not too far. No, it's a narrow, long development along Route 29.
Okay. And not very much land and a whole lot of development on arguably a little bit of land, under 300 acres.
Right. Yep. It's got a mix of housing types. So there's certainly some single-family detached houses on cul-de-sacs, but there's also condominiums and what the developer has described as workforce housing. So that's their approach to the affordable housing situation.
What is workforce housing?
Well, that's something in between, you know, the affordable housing and the expensive housing. It's something for maybe those households that have two working people in the house and could afford something a little more.
Yeah.
They were trying to strike a compromise between the county's goals and what they thought would be a good product.
Right, right.
So we talked about North Point a little bit last week in the context of the National Ground Intelligence Center or the Ravanna Station Military Base, because I brought up on the show that the U.S. Army had just finished an environmental assessment about the expansion of that base. And that information was being, you know, brought to the public's attention. And we talked about some of the issues in that environmental assessment. One of them was, and we hit this as time was running out, so we didn't get to give it our full attention, but it was that the U.S. Army was noting that their expansion was going to drop a lot of additional traffic on Route 29 North. And they said it would be, quote, desirable to have, you know, Route 29 be three lanes in each direction in that area. Right now, it's only two lanes at what's called Boulders Road.
Where their light is at the entrance to
There's a light now
Inject.
That yeah. lets you into the entrance to the National Ground Intelligence.
And that light is going to go from a grade C, which it is now, to a grade F after they expand.
That
right?
was their prediction at the time of, you know, heaviest travel.
Right.
So, like right now.
Yeah.
If you're driving past there right now, you know, think about a bigger military base and the fact that, you know, right now we only have two lanes in each direction. What I didn't mention and should have was that private developers on both sides of Route 29, both in the North Point development and then also at UVA in the research park, both of those private interests have committed to building the third lane, northbound and southbound, on 29 up to a certain point towards NGIC.
Yeah.
So within about 0.8 miles of NGIC, they've committed to going from Profit Road north with lanes on both sides of 29.
Profit Road just north of the river, just past Sam's Club and Walmart.
Well, no, you're...
Or is this much further up?
Profit Road is Airport Road.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
Airport Road's on the left, Profit Road's on the right. So from that point north to within about 0.8 of the Ground Intelligence Center, think about these private developers are bringing to the table a third lane on each side.
And is North Point one of those developers
yes.
that's pledging an extra lane?
That's right. Chuck Rotkin and Don Wagner, the two key people with the North Point development. And in fact, they brought it to my attention that, you know, I didn't bring that up last week.
Yeah, yeah.
And certainly they deserve credit for bringing, you know, that to the table as part of their development. And, you know, those improvements, once built, would get Route 29 expanded. However, there's still some obstacles to what the problem is that the Army pointed out. The Army said, hey, we're going to have all these new people working here, and this intersection is going to need some help. The problem is between where these private proffers sort of end and the Ground Intelligence Center, you've got a little under a mile, and that constriction point, you know, going back down to, let's say they build the three lanes, but then you would constrict back down to two, and you've got to cross the North Fork Rivanna River. So guess what? We got bridges there.
Yeah. And it's very expensive to add a lane
where
a bridge is.
And I'd ask the community to think back when the South Fork of the Rivanna River, when 29 was expanded, remember the bridge construction that
went on
there. Now, I'm not sure those bridges would be of the same nature, but the point is it's more expensive.
And can the federal government get involved if they're the ones that are bringing a lot of the new traffic?
Well, I guess I would say that there's nothing to stop anybody from getting involved and helping. Certainly, you know, with Meadow Creek Parkway, we know that, you know, an earmark was given to the community from the federal government to help
yeah.
that project along. It's certainly, sure, it's possible.
Heck,
anything's possible.
They print the money.
But, you know, funding for this would be a challenge to close
yeah,
that gap.
Yeah, of course.
And, of course,
yeah.
the community knows right now what it's like to have a wider 29, and then it constricts after the Sam's Club and
yeah.
Doubletree Hotel.
And it hits those hills, and that's where you get all the accidents.
Right.
Yeah.
So I wanted to point that out. And I think, you know, you were asking about Charlottesville tomorrow. And one of the things that I have as my goal is to get those shared facts on the table so that the community can have a good discussion about these matters.
Wasn't, you know, North Point scheduled to, at full build-out, North Point adds how many cars to Route 29 a day? Was it 30,000?
When the project was approved in 2006, the estimate at the time was that current traffic at the Airport Road intersection with 29 had about 37,000 vehicles per day already.
Yeah.
So that's the existing traffic 2006
right now.
Estimate. And North Point at full build out was projected to add another 30,000 vehicles per day.
So almost double.
Yeah.
Now the traffic at the Airport Road intersection with 29.
That's right. Now, of course, part of a key feature of the North Point development is a parallel road, you know, through their development and connecting up to the road that goes through Forest Lakes. And so, again, creating sort of a parallel road on that side that, you know, the developer hopes is going to mitigate some of that. But clearly UVA and the developer want, you know, better traffic flow out in front
yeah.
of their project.
The parallel road would be nice because if you live in North Point, then you don't have to get out on 29 to go to the grocery store or the food line
you
over there at Forest Lakes.
That's right. Now, you know, think brainstorming about things. Think about the people who live in North Point who might work at the Ground Intelligence Center. You know, imagine if there was a pedestrian bridge or something over the river that allowed you to bike or walk, you know, from your house.
Yeah, because it goes right up to it, right?
Right. Why drive out on 29 and then park when you live next door?
Yeah.
So, you know, some of that creative thinking was brought up at the time. And I think this community over the past couple of years has thought more and more about sort of alternatives to driving and getting those things on the table in the form of the Regional Transit Authority, but also just more support for pedestrian and bicycle.
Yeah.
Access.
And the North Point developers seem to be open to that kind of thing? Or
I don't know that came up too much in their discussion. They might have very well been open to it. Security concerns, you know, on the intelligence side might have thwarted that. But, you know, again, you would hope that the community would keep an open mind to those things and explore those alternatives. Get every option on the table and let's see how we can best do this.
Or golf carts.
Now, one thing I would mention, though.
If I could drive a golf cart to work, I would.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
A key thing, though, is also since the North Point development was approved, we've had a master plan taking place. So the Places 29 master plan is the 20-year plan
for
all of 29 North.
Yeah.
One of the key recommendations in Places 29 today, and it hasn't been approved yet, one of the key recommendations is grade-separated interchanges, both at Airport Road on 29 and then also in front of the Target and then also at the entrances to, you know, Forest Lake South and then a couple other spots, you know, further south.
Gosh.
That's a lot of grade separation.
And for those who don't know what a grade separated interchange is,
You lift the road that intersects with 29, you lift it up over and let 29 go under.
Like Barracks and the 250 bypass, or like Emmett Street and the 250 bypass.
Yeah, or Park Street and the 250 bypass.
Or what they want to do down here at the McIntyre Road and the 250 bypass,
right,
with the Meadow Creek Parkway.
That's right. So grade separation now has come on the table as a recommendation, given all these traffic demands and the growth that's expected up in that part of 29 North. However, at the time North Point was approved, that really wasn't part of the discussion because the Places 29 concepts weren't on the table. And so we don't have a proffer to support those kinds of things. We also don't have proffers from Hollymead Town Center to support grade separation. So there's another major infrastructure project that's transportation related that our community has to think about.
How come those master plans with all those great ideas always come after the developments are done and they're sort of locked in with what they're going to do?
Well,
that
is a great question, Coy. Perhaps we can touch on after the break.
Let's take a break for local news and weather. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow.
You're listening to the podcast of Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Podcasting of the show is made available by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.
Let's continue our discussion with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at sevilletomorrow.org. You like that? Charlottesville Right Now.
You are having way too much fun today, Coy.
They, you know what's funny? I just have to say this. They put a TV up in the lobby here at the radio station.
It was a big TV.
Like 2 months ago.
Big and flat.
And it's sat there. It's a big flat screen television up on the wall in the lobby. And it's been sitting up there.
I never saw it on.
For like months. And I've asked Lisa at the front desk, when are they going to fix that thing? And lo and behold, Micah came in and worked some magic, and it works.
Wow, there it does look nice.
There's CBS 19 right on the screen. See, I can watch TV and do radio,
Coy,
at the same time.
Why does a radio station have a big TV on the wall?
I don't know. That's a good question. They should just have a big speaker. A big Bose stereo speaker out, and people can just sort of sit around it and warm their hands.
What do I know?
So before we went to a break, I asked you a question, and I'm hoping you can we can figure out an answer, because I think this is a question a lot of people have. If you are plugged in at all to any of these growth and development issues, one question you keep coming back to is, why is it that they do a master plan when it seems that all the development has already taken place? I mean, look at Pantops. They're doing a master plan and it's done. I mean, the developers already planned it. It's built, buddy. You know, I mean, it's pretty much done. Well, how would this, is that? Am I just seeing things, or does that? I don't think there's a conspiracy here. I'm wondering what's going on.
Let me start on a positive note. At least we are doing master plans. I think that's I think that's a good thing for the community, that we are putting the effort into 20-year plans for how we want to develop. A lot of communities around the country,
they don't
state,
even ask that question.
They don't do that. So we have that working in our favor. Certainly the public has been quick to point out when major developments are coming forward in places like Crozet with Old Trail Village. You know, there's a master plan process underway. In that case, the developer said, I'll wait for the master plan to finish before I move forward with my major development. And so there, it sort of worked. You had a private developer own the land. They could develop it, you know, by right in a certain way. They wanted the rezoning. They worked with the county to delay that. Now, the community out there wasn't happy with the end result, per se, as far as the county's interpretation of how it should rezone Old Trail. But again, there was a plan on the table, and our master plans get revisited every 5 years. So the Crozet master plan will come back before the county next year, believe it or not. So in 2009, we're going to be talking about the Crozet master plan again.
Wow.
And revisiting it. But, you know, when Biscuit Run came up, that's south of the city, and a lot of people said, you know, we haven't even started a master plan for the southern urban area, and that's neighborhoods like Redfields and Mill Creek and Lake Renovia. So there was some development there, but people said, you know, before you approve Biscuit Run and put in 3,100 homes, let's have a master plan and figure out how we can do this.
And the county said,
well,
no.
The county could have said no, and that could have been one of the reasons to say we're not ready for this yet. But the risk they take in doing that is that the developer says, well, I can't wait, and I'm just going to go ahead and buy right, put in 900,000 homes on cul-de-sacs, and you won't get a dime for me in proffers. So that's the often the conversation that takes place.
Yeah.
And you'll hear elected officials say to their constituents, you know, if I don't approve this now, they could do something we're not going to like at the end of the day. So I'd rather work with them, get something that's better for the community, get some dollars on the table for transportation, for affordable housing, for schools, you name it. And so there's a balance there. Now, you know, that's happened up 29 North with North Point, which we were talking about previously. And again, that got out in front of the master plan. But, you know, you've got private developers who can do certain things by right on their own. They don't need any, you know, assistance from the county. But we're trying to create this framework where we can give them the right incentives to come in with projects that meet the community's expectations. And, you know, that takes a lot of work by our elected officials, and that's why their jobs are so important and why the people they appoint to the Albemarle County and the City Planning Commission are so important. So let me segue into
I was going to say, a very nice
that.
Segue.
Thank
yes.
you. It's been a while
Indeed.
Since I had a good segue. At the recent Board of Supervisors meeting, and again, they just, you know, started their – they had their first meeting of the year last week.
Last week, right.
Ken Boyd is going to continue as chair of the board. David Slutsky moved into the vice chair slot, as we predicted last week. And one of the first things they had to take care of was figuring out who was going to be on the planning commission, because as we said, a supervisor gets to pick their planning commissioner.
Right, right.
Ann Malik is the new supervisor from Whitehall, and she picked Tom Loach, who's been very involved in the Crozet master plan. So Tom Loach is now a planning commissioner. His first meeting will be tonight, and I'm heading there after this show. There was a surprise, though, that I had not anticipated, and that was Lindsay Dorier changing his planning commissioner.
Whoa.
So Petey Craddock has been a longtime commissioner, and Lindsay Dorier made a change, and he appointed a woman named Linda Porterfield to that seat. She's a Keswick resident. I believe she lives in Glenmore, and she's had past experience in positions like this in the place where she previously lived, which is in a town called Upper Arlington, Ohio, which is outside of Columbus. She's been a resident here since 2002, and important to Lindsay Dorier was that she's a resident of the growth area out at the village of Ravana.
Which has been a complaint by a lot of people, that people on the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors, none of them live in growth areas.
That's right. So now we've got both Loach and Linda Porterfield, both representing growth areas, both new members of the Planning Commission, their first meetings tonight.
That's very significant.
It is.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that we're going to see big changes overnight, but just the fact that you've got members of growth areas now on the Planning Commission, that's incredibly significant.
But these planning commissioners are the first people in line to look at some of these major developments and have work sessions about them. And they really do have a very important role shaping the outcome for the community. So that's why we give them as much attention as we do at Charlottesville Tomorrow, and why I think the public needs to pay attention to their actions and come to their meetings and participate in these work sessions.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to say, the Albemarle County Planning Commission has done a bang-up job the past couple years really welcoming public feedback at work sessions. In the past, a work session was only for the developer, the applicant, and the commissioners.
And the public could just go and watch and be
quiet.
The public
had to wait for the work sessions to be done, and then at a public hearing, they got their time. Now, the leadership of the board of the commission has been allowing public comment throughout. I think that's been a great thing for the community.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it does what we should be doing. It involves the public in the process. And, you know, like I've said a billion times, we live where Thomas Jefferson's hometown. If ever there was a place that should have open meetings and that works, you know, to empower the public, it should be Charlottesville. It should be Central Virginia.
So where the county has plugged two new people into position, the city is looking at filling two positions. And I think this was a story we broke. Sean Tubbs, I think, broke this last week for us. But Bill Lucy is going to resign as the chair of the City Planning Commission. And I think that's effective in March 13th, 2008. And somebody else has already said they're not going to run for another term. So the city is going to be looking to fill two seats on the City Planning Commission.
Again, very significant. You could have how many people are on that? Five?
There are, I believe, five.
Five?
I might be wrong about that, but I'm blanking at the moment.
Does it work like it does in the county where the city council would just pick people to serve on that, or is there an election?
But remember, in the county, we have magisterial districts, so a supervisor picks somebody from their district, and that's their man or woman on the commission. In the city, everything's at large, so
yeah.
City councilors are elected at large, and they, as a group, pick who's going to be on the Planning Commission.
Right, right. When would that happen? Just in the next few weeks, I guess?
They're certainly going to have to start opening up the application process soon and figuring that out. But again, Bill Lucy will resign effective in March, and they're going to be looking for applicants. So
yeah.
If you're listening out there and you've been intrigued by this program in particular, now's your opportunity.
There you go. And Bill Lucy, of course, has done a wonderful job and years of public service to the community and a lot of expertise and was there for so many critical conversations of what this community in Charlottesville and the city would look like, and he will be missed. What's the latest with the calendar? But tonight is the big Planning Commission meeting in the county. The first with its new members.
First with the new members. We'll snap some pictures of those new folks and put them up on our website for you to enjoy tomorrow. But one of the big issues tonight is a work session on a property called development called Oxford Properties. It doesn't have any other name right now. It's just the name of the company that is trying to do this project.
Yeah. But they haven't branded it yet.
It's going to get a new name, and that always throws us for a loop when they change names in the middle of this. But
right, right.
As of right now, it's called Oxford Properties. The important thing for your listeners out there is it's along Old Lynchburg Road, just as you cross the city line into the county of Albemarle.
No.
So it's just across from Azalea Park. And
wow.
And we do have some stories about that up on our website.
Is that the city or county? That's county.
This is in the county. But I predict there'll be people from the city.
Of course.
Tonight speaking about this.
From the Fry Spring neighborhood.
This is proposed to be 280 student apartments on Old Lynchburg.
Another one
Road.
Of those? Boy, they just keep coming out of
on about 24 acres. Now, this is a by right development, but it needs a couple waivers related to critical slopes and I think how many entrances they have or don't have. So that's what's brought it in front of the Planning Commission. Had they not needed those things, they could have just gone ahead and done it.
Yeah.
But now they're asking for these waivers, so that gives the public an opportunity to weigh in on that. And, you know, the people in the Fry Springs neighborhood have been saying for a long time now, help. Help, please, county, don't put more cars on Old Lynchburg Road. Go ahead and build the Fontaine Avenue Sunset Connector. That's a key connector road that would go from a lot of those developments in the county and connect over to the research park at UVA off of Fontaine Avenue. That road,
so that they don't have to drive up through the Fry Spring neighborhood to get on JPA.
To get to UVA, yeah. Right. That road, though, it goes through, again, private property, the Granger property, which is off of Sunset, and then UVA is the other participant in this.
Yeah.
And, you know, the county doesn't have the money to just build that road. Everyone agrees that it should be built. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
The community wants it. The elected officials want it. UVA wants it. However, you got to cross over a railroad track. So we got another bridge or tunnel that has to be built.
We don't have any money for
that. And that's expensive. And now each participant, the Granger property, which is Corin Capshaw, they're willing to build, their part of the road. But then you got to cross the chasm to connect it. And that hasn't been figured out as of yet.
Imagine the Fry Spring neighborhood doesn't like this proposed yet another student apartment complex down in their neck of the woods.
What if they don't like it?
I imagine that they don't like this idea.
Oh, I don't think they do. I think that's for certain. However, they can take some solace in the fact that the Board of Supervisors last week did put as a discrete project on their road priority list the Fontaine Avenue Sunset Connector. And believe it or not, it wasn't there before. So now it's been added to the list. And, you know, it still needs to accumulate funding to make it happen. But it's now definitely in there as a priority.
Yeah, but that road's like, that's like getting at the end of a line at the DMV, isn't it? I mean, there are so many other roads in front of it that are asking for funding.
Except, Coy, you can leave the DMV with your license. Yeah, you can't get to the bottom of the secondary road six-year plan in your lifetime.
It is just tons and tons of roads that are just waiting for money.
There are.
Yeah.
In fact, there are only three that are getting any money. It's Jarman's Gap out in Crozet, Georgetown Road in the Jack Jewett District off of Hydraulic, and the Meadow Creek Parkway. Those are the only three getting money and advertising dates that have any inkling that they're going to start anytime soon. The county, though, is, you know, is really working hard. I got to give them credit for trying to say to VDOT, this makes no sense the way we do this. Instead of taking all the money you give us and throwing out a few dollars here, a few dollars there, and barely adjusting the buckets of money for any particular project, let's take all the money that's accumulated on things that aren't getting built and put it all into roads we can actually do something.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got especially—
Once you finish one, yeah.
Especially on the Board of Supervisors, Ken Boyd, Dennis Rooker, both are the leading sort of spokespeople for let's just get something done.
It sounds like just common sense, you know?
And
makes a lot of sense to me.
And we've got a story that just went up, actually, while I was sitting here. My colleague Sean Tubbs posted this. We have a big story up on the web right now about the supervisors talking about rural roads and whether they should be paved or not. That was something that was in the media last week.
Right,
We really listened back to the recording, and we put up two things. We did put an in-depth discussion of it, but we also put a sort of 22-minute feature audio, so you don't have to listen to the hour-long discussion they have. We've condensed it down. And if you're interested in the rural roads in Albemarle County that are currently gravel and you either want them paved or don't want them paved, this is a piece of audio for you.
Allison and I at one point were renting a house for a spell. In fact, we were living there when we got married back in 99 down in it's actually Cove Garden Road down in North Garden. And we loved it. I mean, it was beautiful. And it would have been a very different place if that was paved. I'm not sure I would want that. That's down where John Grisham lived. He lived right nearby.
Well, I've been interested.
Beautiful, beautiful place. And I wouldn't, I mean, if I owned that house, I wouldn't have wanted that road to be paved.
On Seville News, Waldo's news site, there's been an interesting discussion about this paving issue. And one of the things that struck me is the number of people commenting saying, I love the gravel roads for jogging. And I
mean,
I'm not a jogger, but I found that interesting that they preferred those. And I'm guessing it's because it's the road less traveled.
And it's also softer than a paved road.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So yeah, the dirt road, it's going to be, it's better on your feet and your back.
So all the joggers
rather
are
than
laughing
jogging
at me right
on
now.
The,
I just, I don't
rather
know
than jogging
things.
On the asphalt. And plus, the asphalt is usually, there's a grade to it.
Yeah.
So the water can run off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually running on a slanted grade.
So you want to ride, you want to run in the ruts of a gravel road.
Yeah. Gravel is very nice running.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I bet this is pretty controversial because we have a lot of people, folks in the city may not know this if you just moved here, but there's a lot of people still on gravel roads out in the county. This is a big county, Albemarle.
Well, it is big, and there's no way to fund all those roads getting paved. And some supervisors, Sally Thomas in particular, pointed out that she was concerned that if you pave them, you encourage development out there in the rural area, and you get that sprawl.
Of course you do.
That you don't want.
Yeah.
Other supervisors said, wait a minute, these are safety issues where we're doing this. We're worried about school buses going off the road or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And let's get some of these paved where the community has said it's really important to us. That's what makes it a bit of a controversy. The good news for the public, if you're interested in this issue, there's more opportunities, two more opportunities for you to weigh in. both in February and March. We'll give you the details on our calendar.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. Brian, any other calendar items or things of note?
Yeah, let me do a little housekeeping here. Last week, we talked about the U.S. Army environmental assessment on the National Ground Intelligence Center expansion.
Yes.
And I wanted to let the public know that the deadline for comments has been extended. The county asked for an extension, so you've got till January 25th. Close of business that day to get the U.S. Army your feedback on the environmental assessment for the NGIC.
And for more information about that,
on our website,
civiltomorrow.org.
Yep. And the category for that is Ravana Station Military Base. So we're going to cover the County Planning Commission tonight. Tomorrow is a Board of Supervisors meeting, and Coy, you'll be excited about this because guess what they're having a work session on? Fifth Street and Avon project.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the retail development between Fifth Street behind the Hardee's.
Yeah, back behind the Hardee's.
Connecting over to Avon Street.
That's a huge thing.
Big work session on that tomorrow.
And that's going to be the first big thing besides maybe PVCC or the jail that when you drive through our area on 64, it'll be right in front of you. You can see it.
Well, hopefully you won't see it from I-64, actually.
Oh, good.
You may see it from an angle to a certain degree. But the idea is the trees along that I-64 boundary won't let you see
it. And that's where the rumored Home Depot is going to go, right?
That's right.
I know you're excited
about that. So we'll keep you posted on that.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Y'all have a great night.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.